small talk about the weather while I laced up my running shoes. Then she was singing in the shower, or leaving bras in the bathroom, or snort laughing over reruns in the living room. The woman snorted when she laughed, and I hated that some dark corner of me found it kind of cute. She'd taken the guest room and had made herself at home. I was the one who felt like I was intruding, like I was a guest in her home. But damn it, I'd gotten here first. I belonged here more than she did. I was building a relationship with family. She was just trying to exploit a scandal. Wasn't she? I made it a point not to let her chase me into my room, made a big deal of being home as much as she was. We both had jobs without a consistent 9-to-5. Most of the classes and training that I did were in the mornings and evenings, which left me in the house with her during the day while she muttered over reams of notes and typed like her fingers were on fire. Every time I turned around, she was there. So I fought back. Whenever she sat down to work in the living room, I turned on the TV and settled on the couch. Whenever she got in the shower upstairs, I ran the hot water in the kitchen sink until she yelped from the cold. Whenever she cooked, the woman lived off canned food, nuggets, and peanut butter and jelly, I made a production out of my superior meal prep. And judging by her bubbly morning greetings every damn day, I wasn't bothering her in the least. Unless it was all an act, Shelby was the happiest damn person I'd ever met. It was like she was hosing down the house with fairy dust. It made me irrationally angry, something I hadn't felt for a long time. I pushed harder in my workouts, focusing my energy on them, but every time I came home, there was Shelby, perky and happy, giving me a little wave from her corner of the living room or shoveling canned ravioli into her smiling mouth. I needed to have some words with that half-sister of mine.
"I hereby call this Bodine family breakfast to order,"
Bowie said, smacking the bottle of syrup on the table. Kitchen renovations were almost finished for him and Cassidy. They'd lived in two halves of a double for years before ceremoniously knocking down the wall between them and plotting out a new future together. When it was done, it would be a great gathering place, but right now there were construction tarps and drywall dust everywhere. Cassidy was dressed for work in her deputy uniform, and I had a sinking feeling this breakfast was part of her official business. Gibbs was bleary-eyed and knocking back coffee like it was his job. I got the feeling the guy wasn't sleeping much. If he'd been remotely human, I'd have asked him about it. But the way he snarled at Jameson when he asked about the softball lineup clued me in that it would be a wasted question.
"Where's Leah May and Devlin?"
I asked. Scarlett was already working her way through a stack of pancakes and checking her calendar on her phone.
"Dev's in the office today. Had some client meetings to take care of. I think old Judge Carwell's paying him a visit, too."
Devlin had traded in his political aspirations to fall in love with Scarlett and open a private law practice in Bootleg Springs. Judge Carwell was about 10 years past retirement age, and rumor had it he was looking to get Devlin elected once his Alamette County residency was official.
"Leah May and June are checking out the shop. Junie finally stopped winding up the landlord over the rent, and they signed the papers last week,"
Jameson grinned.
"How's construction coming?"
Bowie asked Scarlett.
"Hallelujah, thank you, Lord, we have a basement,"
she sang.
"Or at least a hole in the ground. I'm thinking about taking some of Dev's law journals over and throwing them in the mud to celebrate."
"Maybe you could take your new tenant over with you and leave her there," I suggested.
"Now, Jonah, I thought for sure you would be mature enough to share your space with a roommate,"
she said, batting her eyelashes at me. "Are you trying to fix me up with Shelby?" I demanded. Gibson dragged himself out of his grumpy stupor.
"Damn, Scar, we didn't even get a chance to tell you about poor Jonah's broken heart."
I glared at him. "Never should have said a damn thing to you assholes.
I wanted to say that I never should have shown up in bootleg, but even mad, I wouldn't have meant it.
Tell me what? What broken heart? Was it that Lacey and her dumping you at the prom?
Scarlett demanded, flinging her fork down on the table. George had thrown a prom redo when he found out Cassidy's sister June had missed out on hers. Under duress to pick a date, I'd invited Lacey Dickerson, who left with Amos Sheridan. I hadn't advertised the fact that Lacey had asked me to go to help her make Amos jealous or that her plan had worked perfectly. I'd had a date that kept my elderly clients from matching me up with any number of their single, or in Mert's case, unhappily married, relatives. And Lacey got her Amos. It was a win-win. No, I have no hard feelings toward Lacey. I do, however, have hard feelings toward you forcing me to cohabitate with a reporter who came to town just to get dirt about our father. I was yelling now. I blamed it on my overexposure to the Bodines. None of them could speak at normal volume for longer than a minute or two.
First of all, have you even tried talking to Shelby? Because you, brother dear, are sorely mistaken about Shelby's line of work, though that's mostly Cassidy's fault,
Scarlett said, joining me in shouting range.
Hey!
Cassidy complained at being thrown under the bus.
Secondly,
Scarlett continued, ignoring her best friend's outburst.
I didn't force you to cohabitate with anybody. I have a business to run and a house to build. I don't know why you feel like you should get special treatment at my expense.
Admit it, Scar. You put us in that house together on purpose.
How dare you, Jonah Bodine? I did no such thing.
Scarlett's gasp moved paper napkins across the table. She was lying. We all knew it. Except maybe Scarlett. Cassidy groaned, and Bowie leaned in to give her shoulder a fortifying squeeze.
Okay, listen up, she said. This fight is super entertaining, but I've got to be at the station in 20 minutes, and I thought y'all would want an update on the body.
That shut everyone up.
Did they identify her?
Scarlett asked. Gibson's hands were fisted on the table, his knuckles white.
Well, it's not going to be that easy,
Cassidy said, slipping into official mode.
The skeletal remains were found during excavation for a new housing development. As of right now, they still haven't found the skull.
I pushed my eggs around on my plate, not so hungry anymore.
What in the hell happened to her head?
Scarlett asked. Jesus, did someone decapitate her? Jameson asked, looking a little green around the gills. Cassidy shrugged.
It's unlikely. It was a shallow grave, so things like predators are a factor. It could be there. Investigators are going through the site with fine-tooth combs. But basically, without dental records, it's going to be damn hard to identify the body.
What about DNA? I asked.
With remains that have been exposed to the elements that long, it's unlikely at best,
she predicted. But they think it's her, Gibson said flatly. They think that body is Callie Kendall.
According to the reports the locals are sharing with us, the approximate age of the remains and size are a potential match for Callie,
Cassidy admitted.
They can tell she was somewhere between 15 and 18 years old at the time of death and died somewhere between 12 to 14 years ago. So it's a possibility, given the fact that the remains were found less than 20 miles from where your father got the speeding ticket. It takes it from possible and nudges it on up to the edge of probable.
Scarlett crossed her arms but remained silent. She'd staunchly believed in and loudly defended our father's innocence. Gibson, however, was equally stubborn in his belief that Jonah Sr. was a murderer. The rest of us fell somewhere in the middle.
I'm sorry, Scar,
Cassidy said, squeezing her shoulder. Bowie leaned over and patted his sister's knee. It's gonna be all right, no matter what, he promised.
Anyway, I know this isn't great news, and I know y'all are damn tired of the whole thing, but until investigators find the skull, we won't know anything. So just hang in there. Stick together. We'll get through this together.
Scarlett shoved her half-eaten pancakes away.
I don't know about y'all, but I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
I hate waiting for the other boot to drop, Bowie agreed. We find the sweater and Dad's stuff. The blood is Callie's. Then she's alive and all. Oh, hey, I was just living with a weird boyfriend and his cult family for the last decade. And Dad was just a guy trying to help a girl out. Then Mom's accident might not have been an accident. Now there's a dead body. How much not knowing can we all take?
I only shared some blood with them. I was free to leave at any time. But my brothers and sister had planted their roots deep here. They didn't have the option to go and start over, to escape.
What do you suggest? Jameson asked wearily. You know what we're gonna do?
Scarlett said, rising out of her chair.
We're throwing the biggest shindig Bootleg Springs has ever seen, and we're gonna eat, drink, and dance ourselves stupid.
You're damn right we are, Bowie said, throwing his napkin on the table.
He stood and pressed a kiss to Cassidy's mouth.
Deputy Tucker, will you do me the honor of being my date? How is any of this going to help figure out what Dad had to do with Callie or what happened to Mom?
Gibson asked, more wearily than angry. Scarlett circled the table and put her arms around his neck.
It isn't going to do a damn thing other than remind us that we're still here. We all survived.
Gibson reached up and squeezed Scarlett's hand tight, and I saw something that looked like grief flicker over his face.
If you think you're going to talk me into taking Shelby to this party, you've got another thing coming, sister dear, I said, pointing my fork at Scarlett. She snorted smugly, and I realized I'd just stupidly thrown down the gauntlet. Question: How have your neighbors shown their support for you?
Gibson Bodine: By leaving me the hell alone. Not everyone needs a hand to hold or a shoulder to whine all over. Solitude is the best medicine.
8. Shelby. Moonshine Diner was my absolute favorite place in Bootleg proper. It served up good food, new rumors, and an opportunity to chat up half of the town on their way through the front door. I waved at GT in the back booth. My brother, the football hero, was a head and shoulders taller than just about everyone else in here. He was also beaming like a man in love, I noted, sliding in across from him.
Hey there, Shelby, sweetheart! Clarabelle, the waitress, owner, and flesh and blood of the institution, called from behind the counter. I'll be right over with your ice water. Thanks, Clarabelle.
I turned my attention back to my brother. Can you believe we have a place where the waitress knows our names and our drink orders? GT smirked. He'd spent the last several years living in Philadelphia, playing football in the field, at least until a career-ending injury brought him here. The healing powers of the hot springs and one June Tucker had lifted him from his forced retirement funk.
It's a far cry from the big city, he agreed.
He studied my face.
You look tired.
I bit back a sigh. We weren't biological brother and sister. I'd been adopted as a toddler by James and Darlene Thompson. Young GT and I had instantly bonded, or so the story the 8,000 pictures of our childhood told. Family didn't require blood. We were living proof of that. Even now, we were close, despite the fact that we'd lived in different cities for the past several years. That distance hadn't dulled my brother's intuition when it came to me. I'm fine, I assured him. It was a fib. I had been keeping a secret. GT had been a little distracted the past few months, what with his career ending, his assistant embezzling from him, and then falling in love with the quirky actuary June. Now that he was happy and healthy, I should have known he'd zero right in on my problem. "I just moved into the cutest little cottage," I said, sidestepping his comment. He held up a hand.
"Shell, we live in Bootleg. I already got the lowdown from Jimmy Bob Prosser and Sally Mae Brickman yesterday. June filled me in on the rest and drew me a floor plan to scale. You and Jonah Bodine are roommates."
I laughed. "Don't even think about going big brother on me. I'm 30 freaking years old."
"I didn't say a word," he said, feigning innocence. "But I have to wonder why you haven't told the guy you're not a journalist. Don't you think he'd be a little nicer if he knew the truth?"
I rolled my eyes heavenward. The truth often had unintended consequences. I wasn't a liar, by any means. But sometimes it was better, or in this case, more fun, to withhold information. "I'm just giving him line and letting him swim himself tired."
"A fishing analogy already?" he teased. "We need to make a pact to urban heritage or we'll be hoedowning all over the place."
Clarabelle arrived with my water. She had two pencils stuck in her impressive coppery beehive. They were there as accessories, since she never seemed to write down any orders. "The usual, sweetie," she asked me. "Yes, please," I said, sliding the menu toward her. "And George, your order will be right out. Threw me for a loop today, changing it up like that." She winked and disappeared back into the late breakfast crowd. Watching my brother eat with his football player appetite was one of my favorite forms of entertainment. The man could easily eat half a turkey by himself on Thanksgiving. And since his career had ended, I'd noticed he'd put on a few comfortable pounds. It looked good on him. "She probably had to go buy more chickens just to get enough eggs for your breakfast, George," I teased. His whole life he'd been GT, but come to Bootleg and fall in love, and the whole town weighed in on what they should call him. The last poll in the Bootleg Springs newsletter showed it split down the middle.
"Back to you looking tired," he said.
I groaned. "Ugh, it's nothing. I'm sleeping in a new place and getting used to it."
"You're not having nightmares again, are you?"
At least that was one lie I didn't have to tell. "That was years ago, and I haven't had a nightmare in ages." He nodded, accepting.
"You know, you could stay with me in June," he reminded me.
"I know, and I appreciate it. But I really prefer our relationship to not require me to put a pillow over my head and sing Alanis Morissette for an hour or two every night."
"The walls are thin," he agreed with a smug grin.
I was happy my brother was happy. "Okay, I'm getting grossed out. Can we talk about something other than your sex life?" Clarabelle returned, looking like the cat that ate the canary, and I knew she'd heard every word. "Chocolate chip pancakes for Shelby, and an egg white, pepper, and mushroom omelet for George." I tried not to gag, looking at his plate. "What the heck happened to your usual tower of waffles with a side of 6 plates of bacon?" It was GT's turn to wince.
"Stepped on the scale a few days ago."
"And?"
"And it broke."
I snorted out a laugh and reached for my water.
"I'm working with your roomie on some weight loss goals."
"But you look great, and you're happy," I reminded him. "There's no need for you to stay in playing shape." He leaned in.
"I know you don't want to hear about my sex life, but if I gain another 10 pounds, June will be in danger of being suffocated."
I choked on my pancake, turning bright red until Millie Waggle jumped up and smacked me between the shoulder blades. The pancake went down, but the pain in my back exploded. "Thanks, Millie," I rasped. She was a few years younger than me, but she dressed like she was going to a church bazaar every day. I didn't know what her religious beliefs were, but the woman could bake absolutely sinful desserts. "Anytime, Shelby," she said cheerfully before tottering back to her table. "Well, speaking of being physically fit," I told him. "I did it. I signed up." GT reached across the table for a high five, his hand engulfing mine.
"Seriously? That's awesome. Is Jonah going to help you train? He's a smart guy, knows his shit. A triathlon's a big deal. You can't just half-ass it."
I've already started my research.
He snorted. Shelby, there's a hell of a lot more work than just research that goes into an event like that. Speaking of research, how's your survey going?
First of all, the survey is great. As of this morning, I've had almost 80 responses thanks to the Breakfast Club badgering everyone to fill it out. Secondly, it's not an Ironman. It's a normal person triathlon. They call it a sprint triathlon. It's going to be great. Exercise therapy was supposed to become an important part of my life now. While the idea of regular PT appointments bored me to death, the challenge of an event that I had to study up on, train for, that was my kind of jam.
What are we high-fiving?
Leah May, pretty as always in a cute pink button-down and those fashionable high-waisted jeans, slid in next to me.
Hello.
June, my brother's girlfriend and the woman he was worried about squishing, appeared at his elbow. GT lit up like a Christmas tree and it made my heart sing. This was better than any victory he'd had on the field. That kind of bone-deep happiness I felt radiating off him every time he looked in June's serious green eyes. I adored her for making my brother so happy. He pulled June down next to him and laid a PG-13 kiss on her.
This is a nice surprise, he said, sliding back.
Yes, it is. Leah May is pleased with the progress on the renovations at the shop, and we were both hungry, June explained. Junebug, Leah May, y'all want your usuals, Clarabelle called.
Yes, ma'am,
Leah May said.
That's a silly question, June said with a small frown. Deviations from routine were baffling to her.
Back to what we're high-fiving, Leah May said, scooting in closer to me.
My little sister here just signed up for her first triathlon, GT said proudly.
I hadn't been an athletic kid. I'd spent more time falling out of trees than climbing them. There had been entire semesters of gym class when I'd prayed the volleyball would never come near me. It was out of character for me to throw myself into an athletic endeavor, especially one this competitive. But it was just the kind of project I needed to turn the focus away from the limitations of a diagnosis and onto the possibilities of a life. Well, that's what I told myself every time I started to get anxious about it.
That's so exciting, Leah May approved.
Why would you do that?
June asked, legitimately confused. June's bluntness was one of my favorite things about her. She wasn't tethered to social norms like the rest of us, and there was something refreshing about her reactions.
I know I'm not the athletic type, but I need to do something besides sit on my butt and write a dissertation. I want to work towards something with measurable goals that will keep me focused on the prize.
I had no visions of grandeur of an age group medal, but I did want to finish, even if I crawled across the finish line. I wanted to do it under my own power. If I could tackle something as big as a triathlon, the other challenge I faced would be manageable.
Is Jonah going to help train you? Leah May asked. It's so convenient that y'all are living under one roof.
I don't think Jonah is looking for any new clients, I said diplomatically.
He still thinks she's a reporter, GT explained.
Why don't you simply cease your falsehood?
June asked.
It's kind of more fun watching him be all puffed up and mad over nothing.
It sounded just a little stupid when I explained it.
That sounds manipulative, June pointed out. I can see why it would be entertaining.
Maybe we should feed him a few more little fibs, Leah May mused. Let it slip that you shoplifted from the pop-in.
Or how about you stabbed someone with a knitting needle at Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee, GT suggested.
Perhaps it would be more believable if we told Jonah we saw Shelby interrogating Mrs. Varney regarding the Callie Kendall case, June suggested.
I laughed.
Isn't Jonah your friend?
They all shared a baffled look.
He's practically family, Leah May said. Then why would you go to all the trouble to mess with him like this?
Because he's practically family,
GT said, as if that explained everything.
Also, the guy threw me in the lake.
How did Jonah Bodine throw you in a lake?
Jonah was strong, but it would take more than one man to lift my brother.
He used a trebuchet, June said.
What a weird, wonderful town you have here, I marveled.
9. Shelby. My research suggests that Southerners in small communities are more likely to volunteer, even in unofficial capacities, I said. Can you ladies confirm that? My unofficial adoption by the Breakfast Club included the members taking a personal interest in me and my little survey. A few of them had invited themselves over for tea and to sit a spell, meaning they were pumping me for information on what their neighbors were saying under the guise of being helpful. Mrs. Varney, Carolina Ray Carwell, Maribel Schilling, and Mert Crabapple were rocking away in the pretty little rocking chair Scarlet had on the front porch of the little yellow house. I'd bribed Leah May to make the sweet tea for me, and I'd bought cookies and cupcakes in town.
"Where do you get your information, girl?" Maribel giggled. "We don't call helping neighbors volunteering."
"What do you call it?" I asked, scribbling notes with one hand while licking pink icing from the other.
"Being neighborly," Mrs. Varney cackled. "You big city folk try to make being nice a big deal, like it's some kind of disease. If I give Mert here a call on my way to the grocery store when I know she's feeling poorly, it's in my DNA to pick up whatever she may need. I'm not calculating favors or keeping track of whether or not she owes me."
"It's the neighborly thing to do," Carolina Ray said, sipping her sweet tea and rocking.
"Less, of course, it's someone who's constantly riled about something acting all ornery," Mrs. Varney put in. "Then there's some scorekeeping, or maybe we don't bring her the name brand butter, or we give her the frozen batch of okra rather than making it fresh."
"So you're even nice to people you don't like?" It wasn't really the questions that mattered. It was the information dump that occurred whenever more than two good Southern ladies got together. It was warming into summer temperatures today, and I was sprawled out on the porch with my laptop, my notebook, and a glass of, don't tell anyone, unsweetened tea, asking questions, getting answers, organizing the information in my mind. This was my happy place.
"Now, let's take a little break from the work and talk about how you're doing, Shelby," Mrs. Varney suggested sweetly. "You've seen that young Jonah naked yet?"
Mert cackled, leaning forward in her rocker.
No. Jonah and I are just roommates. Though I'd seen him sweaty and breathless several times as the man was constantly coming and going from workouts and training sessions. That was almost as good as naked, probably.
"Youth is wasted on the young," Carolina Ray sighed. "If I were in your shoes, I wouldn't let separate bedrooms hold me back."
The other ladies nodded and rocked vigorously in agreement.
"I'm not here to find myself a boyfriend," I reminded them. "I'm here to learn why it is that the residents of Bootleg Springs work so well together. You've got people of all ages and backgrounds banding together for a common cause, and you succeeded spectacularly."
"Shelby, there's no secret there," Mrs. Varney insisted. "We're neighbors. That makes us family."
In nearly every other part of the country, that was not true. I remembered the next-door neighbors we had growing up in Charlotte. They blared rock music until 2 a.m. and got in loud arguments over who was going to clean up the dog poop in the backyard. My parents ended up building a 10-foot-tall privacy fence and threw a party when the couple divorced and sold the house. In Pittsburgh, I knew some of my neighbors' names, at least their last names, according to labels above their mailboxes, but living together didn't automatically foster any sense of community.
"Let's talk about the history of Bootleg Springs," I said, changing the subject. Perhaps their heritage played an important role in why residents felt like they all belonged here.
"Well, you can't talk about Bootleg Springs history and not talk about Jedediah Bodine,"
Mert cackled.
"Oh, that Jedediah was a handsome one," Mrs. Varney said, fanning herself with her paper plate. "You aren't that old, Ethel," Carolina Ray pointed out. "Old enough to remember him tearing through town in his hot rod the day before he up and keeled over from a heart attack."
"May he rest in peace," the women chorused.
They launched into Volume 1 of Jedediah Bodine's colorful history,
and I scribbled furiously, trying to keep up with their back and forth. I was so engrossed in the story that I didn't hear Jonah until his foot hit the first porch step.
"Ladies," he said.
He didn't sound happy. He was sweaty from his personal training session. I liked the idea that he worked out with his clients, suffered with them, not just told them what to do. I had to force my gaze away from that sweaty patch over his chest.
"Why, Jonah Bodine, you're looking handsomer every time I lay eyes on you," Mrs. Varney said flirtatiously.
"Thank you, Mrs. Varney," he said.
He was probably used to the embarrassing attention by now.
"We were just telling Shelby here all about your great-granddad Jedediah," Mert cut in. "I bet you'd like to know a thing or two about him, seeing how you grew up fatherless thanks to that no-good Jonah Bodine Sr. May he rest in peace."
"May he rest in peace," the ladies echoed.
"It's so nice to see you, ladies," Jonah said, pinching the bridge of his nose as if he were warding off a headache. "Shelby, can I have a word with you inside?"
"Ladies, if you'll excuse me, I'm just going to go pour Jonah a nice glass of sweet tea," I said, climbing gingerly to my feet.
He grabbed my wrist with his sweaty hand and dragged me into the house. He opened his mouth to start in on me then and there, but I shushed him and pointed to the screen door where four ladies had their ears wide open.
"I don't like sweet tea,"
he snapped when I pushed him into the kitchen.
"Preaching to the choir on that one," I said, filling a glass from the tap.
"Why not just eat 17 packets of sugar instead?"
I handed him the glass. He hesitated for a fraction of a second before chugging it.
"Thank you for the water," he said. "But I don't like you bringing my clients to my house to grill them about my family. I'm trying to make this ridiculous living situation work, but you're making it impossible, Shelby."
I got goosebumps when he said my name. He sounded a little close to the breaking point. "I asked them about the history of the town. Apparently you Bodines are a big part of that story," I explained. He set the empty glass down with a hard click.
"Stop asking questions about my family."
I'd had just about enough of the Jonah H. Shelby show.
"Oh, for Pete's sake.
June said that you cornered some senior citizen at Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee and demanded they tell you everything there was to know about Callie Kendall. Then I heard through Jameson that you threatened the mayor with a Freedom of Information Act request to get your hands on the police records. And then your own brother starts telling me today in the middle of his workout how you're thinking about producing a documentary."
His voice wasn't calm or annoyed right now. He was bright, blazing mad.
"And no one but me seems to give a damn."
I laughed out a sigh. "Jonah, they're teasing you." He was too mad for my words of wisdom to sink in.
"I don't know what your game is or why my sister thought it was a good idea to have us live together, but if you're stupid enough to think you can take advantage of me..."
"I'm not a reporter, you mule-headed moron!" I shouted.
It took a lot to get me going. Calling me stupid was one of those triggers, and Jonah had just pulled it. Unfortunately for him, there was no safety.
"The entire town knows that I'm not a reporter."
"Yes."
I held up a hand when he tried to speak.
"I write freelance articles for scientific publications and research pieces for academic journals. I couldn't care less what happened to Callie Kendall or whether or not your father had anything to do with it. I'm here to write my dissertation for my PhD and find out how an entire town banded together to evict a bunch of journalists who were making their lives miserable."
He blinked, then frowned.
"They're all just messing with you because you're showing signs of that world-famous Bodine stubbornness. Do I look like I would hold a senior citizen hostage with a knitting needle? Do I act like I'm writing a crime of the century article on your damn father?"
I gave a bitter laugh and didn't even care that all four of my guests were pressed up against the screen door, catching every word.
"Here's a news bulletin for you, Jonah Bodine. I'm not interested in you or your family. I'm here for this town. And if you don't believe me, well, then you can just go bless your own little heart."
"Close enough,"
Mert called approvingly through the screen. The ladies on the porch erupted into applause.
"Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go back to my friends who have been kind and welcoming, unlike some other people in this house."
I shouted. Question. How do you most often communicate with your neighbors? Cheyenne Hastings. I just holler out my window. Sooner or later, everyone in town walks by.
10. Jonah. Shelby stomped out of the kitchen, her long dark hair swinging in its ponytail, leaving me staring after her. I couldn't trust her explanation. Could I? Not when she'd waltzed into town under false pretenses, not when my entire family had tales to tell about her. They wouldn't set me up like that, would they? I pulled out my phone and called the one person I was sure wouldn't lie to me.
Hello, sir, Devlin said. How can I help you?
He had his business professional voice on. I'd probably interrupted him in the middle of being a lawyer. Is Shelby really a reporter, or is she a student working on some kind of degree? I demanded. He sighed into the phone. In this case, it would be the latter, he said. I tipped my head back and stared up at the ceiling. And everybody knows except me? That is accurate. Well, fuck. I swiped the sweat out of my eyes. I think a jury would certainly understand those sentiments, Devlin said mildly. I heard a door close on his end. Okay, Scarlett can't hear me now. Are you hiding from my sister? She's chasing me around with tile samples. Then when I have an opinion on one, she tells me I'm wrong. I laughed despite myself. That sounds about right. You should have heard her when I suggested we hire a designer. I'm surprised you're still alive. Sorry for the tirade. No, Shelby isn't a reporter. She freelances for publications in her field, psychology or social work, along those lines. She's studying the town, not the Bodines. And from what I gather, everyone really likes her, except me, I sighed. Yes, it's been a bit of a running gag since she explained her situation to Scarlett, and Scarlett decided to play matchmaker. I leaned against the fridge and closed my eyes. Her heart's in the right place, he said preemptively. I've been incredibly rude to this woman for days now because someone thought it would be funny to keep me in the dark. If it makes you feel any better, Shelby was in on it. No, that doesn't make me feel any better. It wouldn't make me feel better either, but now you have all the information. My own brothers, my sister, this whole damn town. I was the butt of the joke, the odd man out, and I hated how I sank into those long dormant feelings of not belonging, the kid with no dad. Do you want me to let Scarlett know that you know, or would you prefer to administer your own bootleg justice? I took a shower and stayed under the water, hoping it would wash away the anger and embarrassment I was feeling. I heard Mrs. Varney's mufflerless sedan fire up and drive away, undoubtedly to spread the word to the rest of the town that I'd gotten into a screaming match with my roommate. There'd be more laughs at my expense, I thought. Resigned myself to the fact that even after a year, I was still nothing more than an outsider to them. And why did that bother me? Hadn't I healed those wounds into tough scars? I twisted the faucet off, frowning at the cheerful sky blue tiles and sliding the flowered shower curtain aside. The room was charming and fanciful, and I was feeling pissed off enough to be annoyed by it. The anger was familiar, an old friend from long ago, when a teenage kid started noticing what other guys his age had. Fathers who showed up for their games and took them fishing or bowling or sat through chess tournaments and poetry readings, men who talked to their sons about girls and school, taught them to drive and swing a golf club, to mow the lawn and make waffles. I'd had my mother, a woman who had changed her entire life because of me, for me. But what choice did she have since he hadn't been there for either of us? Now I was in my father's hometown, trying to forge connections, and I was still left out in the cold. It chafed enough that I was embarrassed by it. I stepped out of the shower stall and swiped a towel over the mirror. I looked like him. That, too, annoyed me. For a brief, temperamental stage in high school, maybe I'd acted a bit like him. But I was my own man now. I didn't have to prove my worth to anyone, least of all the family I hadn't known I had. I probably owed Shelby an apology. I'd been rude at best, an asshole, more realistically. But she'd played a role, hadn't been an innocent victim. I wrapped the towel around my waist and headed into the hallway, and ran right into her.
"Holy mother of pizza!"
she shrieked as she stumbled backward, her eyes widened behind her glasses. I caught her before she could take a header down the steps.
"Calm down before you throw yourself down the stairs."
"Before I throw myself down the stairs?" she scoffed. Apparently, she was still mad. Good, so was I. She seemed to notice my lack of clothing and made a sound like a balloon deflating, her eyes going wide. Her hair was still in that long tail, the color of chestnuts and copper pennies. She was wearing those glasses, the thick tortoiseshell ones in blue. She had more than a dusting of freckles on her fair skin, I realized. And those eyes, even bigger than usual, looked just like the browns and greens of the forest. She had a small scar on her chest, peeking out of the scoop neck of her tee, and a fading bruise in the crook of her elbow. I felt like I was seeing her for the first time. I recalled seeing her at the Black Friday boot camp, thinking she was cute, bubbly, attractive. Maybe now I was seeing her for the second time. And maybe that first impression wasn't so off after all.
"What are you looking at?"
she grumbled, stepping out of my grip. "You."
"I liked it better when you acted like I was invisible."
Feisty, mean, and a little hurt. Maybe I did owe her that apology after all.
"Don't even think about apologizing."
Shelby sniffed as if reading my mind.
"I don't want to hear it."
She paused, bit her lip.
"Also, I'm not sure I deserve it, since I was a willing participant,"
she confessed. "Let's agree to not apologize and to move on," I suggested.
"Fine,"
she said crisply. Her gaze traveled down my chest and torso and seemed to get stuck somewhere around the towel.
"I'd offer to shake on it, but I don't want you to lose your terry cloth."
As a show of good faith, and maybe to tease her just a little, I took my hand away from the towel and offered it to her. She shook it slowly, fighting to drag her gaze to my face. "You're still mad," I noted, seeing the flash in her green and brown eyes.
"Yeah, well, so are you."
"It's our own fault." I'd been too busy feeling hurt to get to the truth.
"That's part of what I'm mad about," she said.
We were still shaking hands, but now we weren't glaring at each other. In fact, that looked like the beginnings of a smile touching the corners of her rosy lips. "Do you want to tell me about your dissertation?" I asked.
"No, I don't want your pity interest."
She pulled her hand out of my grip.
"Just because we're not enemies doesn't mean we have to be friends."
"Fair enough," I agreed.
"I'll have you know that I'm a very nice person," she insisted, stepping around me to get to her room. "It's not my fault that you had the wrong idea about me."
No, but it is your fault that you let me continue to believe the wrong idea.
I don't know about you, she said, but I'm really looking forward to the end of this month.
Mrs. Varney.
Woo-wee, sparks are flying at the little yellow house.
Estelle.
Dang it, I can't believe Louisa and I missed it. Catch us up.
Mert.
Don't know what all the fuss is. Shelby still hasn't seen that boy naked.
Carolina Ray.
But the way they hollered at each other, either love is in the air or there's going to be a crime of passion in Bootleg Springs.
11. Shelby. I should have picked a different athletic endeavor, like curling, or badminton, or literally anything other than a triathlon. My swim that morning had been okay, I hadn't drowned, so that was a plus. But a fish did touch my leg, and I didn't much care for that. Also, I got a cramp in the arch of my foot and went down like a ton of bricks. Now I was running, or more accurately, plodding my way through the woods while gasping for air. I prayed that any bears in the vicinity would decide today was not the day to eat a person. I doubted my self-defense classes would be of much help against a bear. Besides, if one lumbered out of the woods into my path, I'd probably just lay down on the ground and wait for the mauling. I was that tired. I wheezed, sucking in a breath and something that felt like a bug. I spit it all out and cursed the $300 registration fee I'd already paid. It was a lot of money for a grad student. A grad student without an actual job lined up yet. A grad student whose half-finished dissertation and new medical diagnosis battled each other for priority. I hate everything, I proclaimed to the majestic trees lining the path. Every damn thing. I should stop talking. I needed oxygen for things other than complaining to nature. I heard footfalls behind me and whirled around, hands up. Not a bear, I promise. Jonah jogged toward me. The man was bare-chested and more majestic than any of this nature stuff. I turned my back on his sweaty glory and made a good show of jogging until my foot caught on a tree root. He caught me by the elbow. The guy kept catching me. And while the squealy teenage girl inside me thought that was worth a journal entry, the adult female felt like I should be graceful enough to not need catching. I'd been in this body 30 years. I should know how to operate it by now. Hi, I said, continuing my awkward lumber. I was so winded I sounded like a phone sex operator with a serious smoking habit. Please keep running, I silently begged him. Just run right past me, give me a glimpse of your sweaty back musculature, and I'll go back to thinking about bear maulings. But Jonah fell into step with me. He could have walked faster than I was running right now. I wanted to kick him. How's your morning? He asked, annoyingly unwinded. It's great. Fabulous, I gasped. Spots danced in front of my eyes. Oh, for Pete's sake. I gave up all pretense, stopped, and bent at the waist.
You okay?
No, I'm not okay. I'm dying. I'm going to hyperventilate and die right here and then be eaten by bears or skunks or timber rattlers.
His feet came into my line of sight.
Go on. Leave me here. I'll crawl home. I heaved dramatically.
You need to change your stride, he said.
I glared up at him from my hunched over position.
I need to not have registered for a triathlon, I countered.
He didn't react to the information, which either meant he was disinterested or my big-mouth brother had already told him.
You're taking too much impact on your heels. It'll tire you out faster. Land on the balls of your feet. It's springier, easier on the joints.
He demonstrated for me while my joints voiced their displeasure at me.
I'll consider your suggestion, I said stiffly.
Your win leaves a lot to be desired, too, Jonah observed. How far did you go today?
I straightened, pleased when I didn't vomit all over him. Peering over my shoulder, I gauged the distance. At least 6 miles, I guessed.
His lips quirked. If you started at the house, you're only about a mile out.
Are you kidding me?
Screw it. I'd kiss that $300 goodbye and find a better way to prove to myself that my body was capable of more than just deteriorating.
Was competitive napping a thing?
Maybe a mile and a half.
I don't want your pity measurements.
Relax, Shelby, he said lightly. You're doing fine. When's your triathlon?
6 weeks.
He didn't outwardly flinch, but I was pretty sure the words, "Oh boy," flitted through his mind.
6 weeks. Okay. We can work with that if you're not setting unrealistic goals.
We? Unrealistic? I really needed some water. My mouth felt like I'd licked a bag of cotton balls. Longingly, I stared at the water bottle in his hand. Why hadn't I thought to carry a water bottle? Rookie mistake. I just want to finish.
Finishing, we can work with.
He put his hands on his hips and stood there looking like a romance cover model. You keep saying we.
I'm a personal trainer. I coach people for athletic events.
I have zero money. Your mercenary sister's rent isn't exactly bargain basement.
Scarlett is a shrewd businesswoman, he agreed.
I was being grumpy and petty. I'm feeling overwhelmed and exhausted, I said by way of an apology.
And I can help you with that, free of charge, he offered.
My eyes narrowed as I attempted to assess his motives, but his handsomeness kept getting in the way. Why?
He shrugged. It wouldn't be very neighborly of me having all this knowledge and not share it with you now, would it?
Bootleg spring sure is rubbing off on you, I observed.
His smile faded.
What? I asked, intrigued by his sudden shift in mood.
Nothing, he said, staring out ahead.
He reached up and across, grabbing his shoulder. Jonah Bodine was feeling vulnerable. Interesting.
Are you still upset with everyone over the whole me being an evil reporter thing?
I hazarded a guess.
He shrugged carelessly.
No one really loves being the laughingstock of an entire town.
That's not what they were doing, I told him. At least not only what they were doing.
Really? Because that's what it felt like, he said.
Jonah, don't you see what that was?
Everyone making sure I remember that I'm the outsider. I should probably get back to my run, he said, jerking a thumb over his shoulder.
Don't you dare move, I threatened.
If he started running, I'd never catch him.
Your family was welcoming you into its ranks.
By making me the ass of a joke?
I rolled my eyes. Ever pledged a fraternity or joined a sports team? This was their way of recognizing you as one of them. You've been initiated into Bootleg Springs.
Initiated? Feels like they're pushing me out,
he said, a little crack in his cool showing. I saw the flicker of hope shine through. If shirtless Jonah was physically attractive to me, vulnerable shirtless Jonah was practically catnip. I was a sucker for authentic vulnerability.
Think about it. How do your brothers interact? Are they cautious with each other? Sensitive to each other's feelings?
No,
he laughed.
They harass each other constantly, right?
Yeah, I guess, he said.
And now they're harassing you because you're one of them.
That's kind of bittersweet. You're one of us. Now we're going to emotionally torture you. Couldn't they have just gotten me a card or something?
I snorted and died a little inside. I'd spent entire years in junior high school wishing I had one of those adorable, bubbly laughs. But hey, I had the wind back to snort and laugh, so it wasn't a total loss. Culturally speaking, you've been initiated, and now a lot is riding on your reaction to the initiation.
In what way?
What if you let your hurt feelings steer you out of town, out of this family? Turn tail, pull up stakes, insert the appropriate southernism here. You'd be rejecting their invitation to join their ranks.
Okay. What's the better option?
Jonah asked, interested now.
The man had to have issues with belonging, considering he grew up rejected in a very real sense by his biological father. It only made sense, and the fact that he was listening told me he cared very much. If you react in a way they'll understand and appreciate, you'll prove that you deserve to be welcomed. You deserve the place they've offered you. A slow grin spread across his face, and I had to turn away from the wattage. It was like staring at the sun. The handsome sun that was making my core temperature rise and causing a hormone dump in my brain.
Shelby, how familiar are you with bootleg justice?
I decided not to mention that nearly every participant in my survey waxed poetically about the merits of an off-the-books legal system. Vaguely, in that I watched Rhett Gensler cover Rocky Tobias's pickup truck in shaving cream bumper to bumper after Rocky ran a stop sign and nearly chased Rhett's granny off the road, I said. What do you have in mind?
Are you coming to the deck party Saturday?
Jonah asked. Was this a date? Was Jonah asking me on a date when I was sweaty and wearing a tank top that said everything hurts and I'm dying? I hadn't planned on it, I said weakly. I'd planned on spending the day and evening binge-watching a new horror show on Netflix, but if the sweaty god before me wanted a date with me... Okay. My brain was oxygen-deprived. I'd already established that. Jonah hadn't asked me to go to the party. He'd asked me if I'd pick up celery at the grocery store, or wondered what kind of laundry detergent I used. Also, just because he was revealing his mushy center to me didn't mean I had to fall into the trap.
Well... I was thinking, the party might be the perfect time for our feud to explode, he mused.
Ah, I was a tool for revenge, not a hot date. I was more comfortable with that. So you'll train me if I help you get revenge on your family? I clarified. He nodded.
I know it sounds stupid, but around here,
bootleg justice, I filled in for him. He grinned. And my knees went a few degrees weaker. Question. What institutional resource do you find most helpful in your community?
Hung Kim. I had to Google institutional resource, Shelby. Might want to dumb these questions down a little. I can probably speak for most of the community when I say bootleg justice, or the authority to solve most problems your own damn self. It's helpful and liberating, and an important institutional resource.
12. Jonah.
Hurry up, Bodine!
Scarlet hollered from the dock. Because I thought things like hollered now. I raised a hand and jogged across her yard to where it kissed the lakefront. It hit me, the quiet waters lapping at the pebbled land, the scents of deep water, sunscreen, and beer wove together to create that perfect early summer smell. The sense of deja vu was almost overwhelming. We'd met this way. Scarlet and her brothers returning from a day on the water, and there I was, waiting on land to introduce myself. In 1 year, I'd been absorbed into the community, into the family. I'd been accepted by them. Well, most of them, I thought, eyeing Gibbs where he tinkered with the motor on the floating deck. The deck was a floating monstrosity with railings, seating, built-in cooler holders, and speakers big enough to entertain half the lake.
All right, let's talk about the rules,
Bowie said, his arm slung around Cassidy's shoulder when I hopped aboard the floating party island. Number one, no talking about anything related to the investigation.
And if y'all do, Scarlet said menacingly, we throw you in the seaweedy part of the lake,
Jameson and Leah May said together. They were cozied up on lawn chairs, beers already cracked, the artist and the model looking cool and happy and relaxed. I felt an unexpected twinge of envy? Maybe. Leah May reminded me a little bit of Renee. Something about her sunny smile, the little gap between her front teeth. Renee never had the chance to be that happy with anyone, let alone me.
Are we all agreed?
Bowie asked. I dragged myself out of my melancholy. I had revenge to extract today. There wasn't any room for sadness.
One rule, I clarified. That's it?
I'd like to submit for consideration that all the usual state laws should be observed today, Devlin said. You know, just to cover our bases, keep us all out of jail. Fine, Scarlet sighed like he'd taken some of her fun away. But if you start saying things like slow down or maybe don't drink two beers at once, we're going to have words, McAllister. My sister was all bluster. The second our attention was caught by the approach of someone else from the lawn, Scarlet jumped into Devlin's arms and wrapped her legs around his waist. She gave him a smacking kiss on the mouth. Love was in the air. What are you doing here? I bumped up the harshness in my tone when Shelby approached. The girl was a born actress. The smile evaporated right off her face, and I felt actual guilt. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Scarlet, I invited her, Scarlet said, hopping out of her boyfriend's arms. And you, brother dear, had better behave. You're both my guests. I gave Shelby a good glare, and she flipped me the bird as she stepped aboard, something I realized no one else knew was out of character for her. Maybe it's time we clear the air, Scarlet suggested. Nothing needs clearing, in my opinion, Shelby said primly. Jonah is welcome to be an ass to anyone he chooses. Devlin choked on his beer and abruptly looked anywhere but at me. But Shelby, don't y'all think... Shelby cut Scarlet off with a shake of her head. It's fine. Let's just leave it alone. Junie and George are catching a ride with Opal, Cassidy said, changing the subject and snuggling under Bowie's arm. I didn't think your deck could handle the weight of a pro football player.
Good thinking, Cass, Gibbs said. We're already over the limit, I muttered, mostly under my breath while shooting a pointed look at Shelby.
I take it your living arrangements have been a little rocky?
Bowie said quietly, offering me a beer. Understatement. I came home the other day and she was interrogating half the town elders, some of them my clients, on the front porch trying to get the dirt on your family.
Maybe it wasn't exactly what it seemed.
Bowie was the good guy, the peacemaker, and he was starting to sweat. I felt pretty good about that. I shook my head. Oh, it was exactly how it seemed. I gotta tell you, I think it might be time for me to be moving on. Bowie had his beer in a stranglehold. I noticed that Cassidy was on the other side of the deck, huddled together with Scarlet and Shelby. You put a ring on her yet? I asked Bowie, changing the subject before he could get himself worked up about my announcement. I gave it about 30 seconds before he excused himself to go spread the word.
What? No, but real soon, as in maybe tonight. Jameson and I were fighting over who got to do it first. I won, though. I've waited longer, and my ring's already done. Apparently, James isn't as talented at goldsmithing as he is with everything else. He nodded in his brother's direction. Jameson had small bandages all over both hands. Real soon, though, Bowie repeated himself, and I noticed he slid a hand into the pocket of his shorts.
We cast off from the dock, motoring across the lake in the direction of what sounded like one hell of a party already. The better part of Bootleg Springs was waiting for us around the bend. Rocks jutted out into the warm water, creating a harbor of sorts. There were a dozen other decks already tied together. Girls in bikinis were lounging on pool floats. Guys were tossing beers and firing up grills. The more adventurous of the crowd were climbing the boulders and jumping off. The scene smelled like sunshine and sunscreen. This was why I loved Bootleg. It was also probably part of what Shelby was looking for in her research. These were people who lived their lives entwined. Neighbors who brought chicken noodle soup over when the flu was going around. Friends who would pick you up and drive you around when your car was in the shop. They'd spend all week together, working, raising kids, shopping, and they chose to spend their Saturday having a good time. I spotted June and George on Opal Bodine's, no relation, deck. June was sitting with her feet in his lap, a book cracked open in her own. While the others busied themselves tying off the deck to the two closest ones, I sidled up to Shelby. She looked like a kid on Christmas morning. "This is amazing," she breathed. "I had a feeling you'd like it." "I can't believe a place like this exists. People like this." She shook her head in wonder. She was wearing cutoffs and a pink tank top that said, "I have no life. I'm a psychology major." Her dark hair was tied in its usual tail and fed through a ball cap with her brother's football number on it. She was cute, like friendly, girl next door, always has a nice word to say about everyone, cute. I was surprised by the urge to reach out and wrap my arms around her, to make her laugh. I hadn't felt that urge in a long, long time. I remembered the plan and schooled my features into a disgusted sneer. "I'm glad you came," I said. She lowered her sunglasses and glared at me.
"I am too. Thanks for asking me."
"They're all looking at us," I said quietly, doing my best to look defensive.
"Of course they're looking at us. Their plan is about to blow up in their faces. Mass casualties. Oh, the humanity," Shelby said, jutting her chin out.
"Should we fight now?" I asked her, suddenly a little anxious to get the fight scene out of the way so we could kick back and possibly even enjoy the day together.
"Let's give it another half hour. We need to time it just right," she reminded me.
"Fine, if that's the way you want it," I said, raising my voice.
"If I had my way, I'd be enjoying this day without someone being a giant turd," she snapped.
I had to turn away and bite the hell out of my lip to keep from laughing.
"Giant turd?" I whispered. "Shut up. I spent a lot of time working with kids. The swearing vocabulary went to my brother."
"Hey, guys,"
Leah May said, easing between us.
"So, Shelby, I love your shirt. Let's go show it to Nicolette, way, way over there. She loves funny shirts."
Devlin wandered up when they left.
"I've been ordered to keep you under control. You are making my girlfriend nervous."
I snuck a peek at Scarlett, who was watching us like a hawk. "What a shame.
I assume there's a spectacle coming?"
28 minutes and counting," he nodded.
"You coming to the Cockspurs game next week?"
I played nice for the next half an hour, making small talk and taking a turn at the grill. Between the partygoers, there were hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken breasts, and even a few grilled pizzas. It was a beautiful early summer day with a soft breeze and cloudless blue sky mirrored on the lake. The music was upbeat and country. I'd never listened to country music before moving here. Now I was half considering buying a pickup truck to haul my boot camp and training gear. There was something contagious about this town, these people. The whine of a boat motor carried over the Chase Rice song. Hell, I could even identify the artists now. I needed an urban vacation somewhere before I was completely absorbed into country culture. Sheriff Harlan Tucker and his wife, Nadine, approached in a small fishing boat. Cassidy waved to her parents and guided them in.
"Are those pepperoni rolls?"
Devlin asked, scenting the air. While the sheriff eased the boat alongside, Nadine handed over the container of what indeed was fresh, hot pepperoni rolls. Devlin, his love for the West Virginia specialty wider and deeper than the lake, nearly shoved Gibson overboard in his quest to get the first one. I spotted Shelby, and she nodded. It was showtime. We met halfway.
"You are the worst human being I've ever met," she shouted.
Right back at you, sweetheart, I countered. At least I'm not an opportunistic bottom feeder.
Oh, opportunistic?
Her gasp could have filled a sail.
You are irrational, unreasonable, and downright misogynistic. You hate women.
No, I just hate you, I roared.
13. Jonah.
Well, go screw yourself then.
She shoved me as hard as she could, which moved me not an inch. I realized it was the first time she'd initiated any physical contact between us. Every time I'd touched her before, it had been to catch her or stop her from falling.
Is there a problem here?
All 300 pounds of George Thompson was headed in my direction. I'd seen the man flip a tractor tire like it was a child's toy. I didn't want to give him a shot at me. Gibson stepped in George's path, not so much to stop him, but more to slow him down a bit.
The problem is that my roommate is a nightmare and I can't live like this anymore,
Shelby screeched.
The real problem is I've been saddled with a vulture circling around trying to tear off pieces of the carcass of my father.
Okay now, that's enough airing of the grievances,
Sheriff Tucker said, ambling into the fray. The music cut off, and every single bootlegger gave us their full attention. I heard beers popping open everywhere. My brothers were trying to ease their way in between us. Scarlet was climbing over deck railings to get closer. Shelby stepped in closer, so we were toe-to-toe.
You know what? I'd like to press charges, Sheriff Tucker. I've been verbally assaulted and emotionally attacked.
Well, now, Shelby, I can understand why you're feeling what you're feeling,
the sheriff said, trying his best to placate.
Screw this, I bellowed. You want the house to yourself? Well, you can have the whole damn town, too. I'm leaving. Jonah Bodine, you're not going anywhere,
Scarlet howled.
Listen, man, we can work this out,
Bowie said, laying a hand on my shoulder. I shrugged him off.
I want you out of my life,
Shelby said. She gave me a solid push, both hands to my chest, and I went from standing on the deck to falling backward. I waved my arms like a bird trying to take flight, but the blue bathwater of the lake enveloped me. I stayed under long enough to let the scene play out a bit on the surface. When I surfaced, it was to pandemonium. Sheriff Tucker was slapping handcuffs on Shelby while Cassidy looked on, horrified.
Dad, what are you doing?
That was assault, clear as day, Sheriff Tucker insisted. And according to Ordinance 417.2, journalists that assault any resident are required to leave town immediately.
How dare you?
Shelby said, making a good show of trying to kick him.
Oh my God, don't assault an officer!
Cassidy went low and tried to hold Shelby's legs. June stood in front of George, looking vaguely concerned and trying to keep him from jumping in the water and drowning me. Gibson was helping June.
Let's all calm down here,
Jameson said, standing on a beer cooler. Scarlet had her hands to her face.
This is all my fault. You're damn right this is your fault,
Shelby howled as Sheriff Tucker tried to perp walk her to his waiting boat. Scarlet jumped in front of them, waving her arms like an inflatable car lot balloon.
Wait! Shelby's not a journalist. It was a misunderstanding. We were just teasing Jonah, and maybe I was playing a little matchmaker too, and it got out of hand. You can't throw Shelby out of town, and Jonah, don't you even think about moving away.
I swam.